My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He's a veteran of the Army Special Forces as well as the Rangers. He's also now the Executive Vice President at the Family Research Council. In addition to all that, he's also been one of the key figures in rallying now more than 700 Special Operations veterans to sign a letter to the leadership in the House of Representatives to demand that a special select committee be impaneled to find out exactly what went wrong leading up to, during, and after the terrorist attack in Benghazi on September 11th, 2012. And General, thanks so much for being with us.
I'm delighted to be with you.
We spoke with Larry Bailey of Special Operations Speaks earlier in the week. How did you get involved in such a major role in putting this effort together and get all these signatures and all these very impressive veterans to send this unified message to Congress?
Well, first of all, I've been working this since not long after the events there on the 11th of September. That said, the U.S. Congress has been sort of ignoring all of our efforts to try and get some full accounting on this thing. And so I just simply reached out to some people that I knew had a deep passion for this that would, in fact, bring a different dimension to it, and that's the retired special operations guys that have been spent a good portion of their professional careers preparing for and executing these kinds of operations. They've risked their lives for this. They've seen people that have sacrificed their lives to save other Americans, and I knew these people would come on quickly and would come on with deep passion.
The letter is specifically aimed at the House of Representatives rather than both sides of Capitol Hill. Any particular reason why you chose the House side?
Well, we thus far have been able to find more support on the House side. There's a House resolution that has now probably 70 sponsors, so we decided to use that as the baseline for trying to energize the Hill for this special committee.
And obviously this letter has just gone public, I think, over the weekend. And so with lawmakers just now returning after the Easter recess, I don't know if you've gotten much of a response yet, but do you get the sense that this is having the impact you would hope it would?
Well, I think that we'll know more in another probably 18 to 24 hours when the House members are back and they're able to go through this. Now, we've already been contacted by a number of House members who are very passionate about this, who agree with us, who are very thankful for the letter, and the media is picking it up. It's getting broad coverage, except by the mainstream media that has been part of suppressing the information on the events there in Benghazi.
General, one of the things we've heard is that a number of different committees, at least this is the explanation from House leadership, that a number of committees have been working on this. They're about to put together a comprehensive report on this. They hadn't given a real specific timetable. What's your sense on that? Do you suspect that there could be some concrete answers in there?
You know, here's what everybody needs to understand. The structure of our U.S. Congress, these independent and separate committees, frequently don't play well together. And each of them has their own agenda, and I'm not being critical by saying that. They have their own agenda. What we're insisting on is that there be some specific answers as to why there was no military rescue effort launched. We all came out of a community where that was one of, or in some cases, it was our primary mission, to go and rescue Americans or to at least recover their bodies and bring them home. So the current structure will not facilitate a bipartisan commission that will ask the kind of questions that need to be asked. You know, if you look at the fact that the commander of the Africa Command, General Carter Ham, has never been brought in to testify, if you look at the fact that there are at least 32 survivors of this incident there, and none of them have ever been brought in question, if you look at the fact that one of those 32 is still in Walter Reed, and a member of Congress has visited him twice, but he's never been asked to just come across town and appear before a committee or subcommittee. This is inexcusable, and it reeks of a cover-up of some kind.
And that's interesting you use that term, because Mr. Bailey used that term as well, saying that as a result of letting his own committees work things out, that Speaker Boehner is at least tacitly involved in covering this up. What specifically do you expect in terms of an answer here? Anything short of the panel would be unacceptable, I'm guessing?
As far as we're concerned, we're all in, and it's an all or nothing. They have to have a special commission.
And if they say no, what does that tell you?
Well, what it tells me is that, they're first of all, they're not showing the leadership. Secondly, they're not taking their oath seriously. And thirdly, that this thing runs very, very deep, and there is something there that is being hidden from the American public.
One of the things that's happened over the past 7 months, of course, is that given the lack of information flowing on this to a large extent, theories have arisen, everything ranging from surreptitious arms trafficking to the Syrian rebels to perhaps even a possible abduction of the ambassador gone wrong. Based on what you do know and given your experience in the special forces and special operations, what pieces can you put together at this point?
Well, first of all, what we do know is that Ambassador Stevens was involved in providing material support to the Libyan rebels when they were trying to unseat Muammar Gaddafi. So he had experience with the people there in Benghazi from that episode. We also know that he was there to meet with the consul general from Turkey. We also can demonstrate that a ship left Benghazi not too long before this event and sailed to Turkey. And from some other sources that we've talked to, there's a fairly strong case to be made for the fact that they were running a covert action program to supply arms and material to the Free Syrian Army. You know what? That's okay. If that's what it is, that's fine. It's a covert action. It's legal. If the president followed the procedure, it's legal. That's not the issue, whether we like the fact that they were supporting the rebels or not, and I don't personally, but that's not our issue. Our issue is, why was there no rescue attempt? Why was there no effort to recover the bodies before they fell into the hands of the Libyans there? And we find that just perplexing. And from our perspective, just inexcusable that we don't have those answers.
Do you feel like you've begun to get any answers on that? Any inkling as to why all those orders to stand down were allegedly given?
Well, I can't figure it out. I just can't figure it out. I think there's a couple of things at play here. First of all, the president was not focused. And I think that he had other things on his mind, and I think that the situation that was unfolding in Libya at the time was not one of them, and he just shirked his responsibilities. Now, I think the other possibility is that there was an effort to maintain the secrecy of the program, that whatever that program was, it was being run out of there. Neither of those is an acceptable answer as to why we don't know more about what happened in Benghazi that day.
Most of the attention on where we might be able to find more answers obviously focuses on the president, then Secretary Clinton, then Secretary Panetta. Is there any particular figure or figures that you think hold most of the keys to this?
First of all, I think that all of them do, but I think that Secretary Panetta got up and made a statement saying, one of the fundamentals is you don't put the military into harm's way unless you know what's going on the ground. Well, that just reflects that the secretary doesn't know as much as he thinks he does. That means that he doesn't realize those forces were created. They were built to be able to go into that kind of situation where the intelligence is not perfect, where there's a lack of intelligence, but with a specific mission of rescuing Americans that were under siege or recovering their bodies. You're never going to go into that kind of situation where you have a clear intel picture. So I think that the secretary, by saying that, the secretary reflects that even he didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what was going on there. And then obviously Secretary Clinton's testimony was just abysmal from my perspective, because she has never addressed any of the questions that we're asking to be addressed there. What support did she ask for from the Department of Defense? What was the response when she asked those, for that kind of support? Ask those questions. And don't be fooled by this response that, well, we couldn't have gotten there in time. Well, then you need to question the military as to their readiness status. If you couldn't get there in time, why not? That's what those forces are there for. And if they couldn't get there in time, then what's your readiness problems?
Just a couple of quick questions before we let you go, General. We greatly appreciate your time today. Just very briefly on these questions. First of all, in your heart of hearts, do you believe that the House will grant this committee?
I think they will.
Do you believe that given, even when Secretary Clinton was testifying a number of weeks ago, that a lot of the mainstream press couched this almost as a partisan type of hearing, that it can be conducted in a nonpartisan or bipartisan way?
Well, first of all, we never asked anybody what party they were associated with when we got 700 names, and we didn't care. And there are both Republicans and Democrats, as well as Libertarians and Independents, associated with this group of 700. We don't see it as a partisan issue. We see this as a demand for accountability, again, because we spent our professional careers doing this kind of thing, and we find this to be the breach of a fundamental American value, an ethos. And let me just say, William Tecumseh Sherman wrote a letter to Ulysses S. Grant in March of 64. He said, "I knew wherever I was that you thought of me, and that if I got in a tight spot, you would come, if alive." That states as articulately as I possibly could ever hope to the American value, the American ethos that was breached on September 11, 2012.
And finally, sir, if the House does grant this committee, do you have any particular preferences as to who would lead the investigation?
No, I'll leave that to the House, but we've given them our list of questions that we think should be asked, and whoever leads that, all we ask for is that you ask those questions, and as long with any others that you come up with.
And the letter's been widely disseminated in the media. Where would you encourage folks to go to get their own look at that letter?
Well, go to a website called endthecoverup.com.
Endthecoverup.com. General, we'll certainly stay on top of this story. Thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Hey, good being with you.
Thank you, sir. Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He's a veteran of the Special Forces and the Rangers in the U.S. Army. Now he's Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council and one of the men spearheading this effort to get more answers on what happened at the Benghazi terrorist attack in September of last year. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.